All right, welcome back to Hash Right Up. Another week, another episode. Thank you for tuning in. Hello, Santosh, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Thank you for having me, Jesse.
You said you're in Valencia.
Yes, I am.
Doing what?
Temporarily. Scoping if this could be next home.
All right. Okay. Is that just you scoping, or are you scoping with your better half?
Yes, wife is along with the ride. We've been on the road for 2 years now trying to find next home, and we're getting closer. We're almost there.
Okay. You visited me in Cape Town not too long ago. How's Cape Town compared to Valencia?
Cape Town's still number one. Valencia is number two right now. So you happen to catch me in the runner-up city.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. Cool. Santosh, you bought a few machines not too long ago from me, and that's supposed to be the main topic of today, just to give people a bit of a perspective from customer point of view. You know, why did you do this? How does it perform versus your expectations and all of that good stuff? But before we get there, do you want to highlight yourself a little bit more and your story in Bitcoin and what you do, and then also highlight the company you're currently working for a bit more?
Sure. Come with a background of industrial engineering, ended up 10 years in software, variety of industries, supply chain, healthcare, field safety, ended up in fintech, customer-facing roles such as pre-sales, professional services, customer success. So saw the entire loop of what a customer would go through and their journey on the software sales side. Ran into Bitcoin in 2018 and sucked me in. I couldn't stop studying it. I bought the domain student of Bitcoin, I believe, in 2020, and the rest is history. It's been my pet project ever since. 2 years ago, yeah, 2 years ago, my wife and I had enough with the corporate life. We'd been slaving away. I mean, as great as the corporate life was, I don't want to make it sound like it was the worst thing. It did us very well. But 10 years in, we just needed a break to see what the rest of the world had to offer, and specifically what Bitcoin was like outside of the Western society without a Twitter screen in front of me. So we sold basically 95% of all the things we owned and hit the road. We landed in Egypt. So we started in Cairo and went all the way down to Cape Town overland, skipping Sudan because of the civil war. But that entire trip changed the way that we perceive Bitcoin. The way that we argue sometimes on Twitter about all these different use cases, and it's, every persona in the world will use Bitcoin differently. So we can't generalize it that this is what is first, this is what is second, this is how you should use it. I don't give a shit. Just use the damn thing for whatever problem it solves for you, because it'll solve a different problem for you, solves a different problem for me. And yeah, I mean, during that journey, we ended up meeting each other, and you were my gateway into the mining drugs. So here we are.
Yeah, the trap that made you fall into it. I saw recently a recording of the panel that Herman was on for the Las Vegas Bitcoin conference, and they talked about Bitcoin as money and store of value and unit of account and what comes first. And he said something very brilliant, where he said, like, look, it depends what comes first, whether it's store of value or unit of exchange. Really depends on where you're from. You know, they all agreed unit of account was going to come last, but, like, as you said, you know, everybody find a use case for Bitcoin and a solution to a problem that they have personally. And I mean, we both come from a world where, yes, you know, I mean, we don't need it to transact. We're zipping around the world in airplanes, and we can find a way to pay anywhere, but not many other people. There are many people out there that cannot, let's just put it that way. Okay, so Bitcoin mining, Santosh, how did I pique your interest? I wouldn't have been able to make you fall into Bitcoin mining, into the Bitcoin mining trap without there being any interest. So why do you think made you interested enough to buy a couple machines and have them hosted?
Yes, I totally forgot that I didn't even introduce where I am right now. So I didn't hit both your questions in the previous one. So let me just quickly tack that on before I address this. If that's okay, is that cool?
Of course, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a Bringin right now. I joined recently, about 3 months ago. The goal is to build a seamless bridge between euros and Bitcoin, because we're not at hyper-Bitcoinization yet, and Bitcoiners need a way to live and pay their euro bills. We can talk about that later, but I'll get back to your question about what, I mean, I'd always had an interest with mining. It wasn't that mining wasn't above me or I didn't recognize what it was. The way I'd always seen, how do you get a hold of Bitcoin? You can buy Bitcoin, you can earn Bitcoin, you can mine Bitcoin. And at that stage, I found a way to buy. Exchanges were plenty. I know non-KYC ways, KYC ways. I knew how to buy Bitcoin. When we were in Uganda, we opened up a juice shop that's Bitcoin preferred. So I figured out a way how to earn Bitcoin. So that was like unlocking step two. But mining Bitcoin wasn't something that we ever unlocked. So you were just the tipping point that I needed to unlock that third step for us. But I will say visiting Gridless, speaking with Eric, and understanding the Gridless story definitely helped shape my perception of mining much more than what the media perpetuates. So I have to give credit where it's due that the Gridless story played a big part in my perception and my understanding before we crossed paths.
Okay, but I mean, that's mining at scale, right? That's mining in a container and rural community. There's different levels to mining. There's retail mining with 1 to 50 machines or whatever, mm-hmm. and then it gets a bit more serious until you become like a big quote unquote big miner, right? The investment into machines is not easy on the small scale, especially if you want to if your absolute first priority is to make it make financial sense 100% of the time. And that's something that I try to educate on quite heavily, is that it is not that easy to make it viable, right? There is certain prerequisites that make it a more sensible investment. For instance, if you seek cash flow in Bitcoin for whatever reason, or if you have a tax strategy, or if you want to educate yourself, what were sort of besides mining Bitcoin and having a cash flow, was there any other interest from your end when it came to doing this?
It was just a pure learning experience. Going back to student of Bitcoin, this was a way for me to learn. I'm a big believer that if you can't simplify things and explain it, then you don't truly understand it. And for me, conceptually, mining made sense, but having never taken part in that process, I couldn't say that I truly had been an actor in this play. So for me, it was making sure that I had even access to one machine to see how it operates. What are the results? What has been the process? To be able to speak on it rather than just learning and speaking about it theoretically. So for me, it was really, aside from the intellectual way of approaching, whether tax, getting into the larger scale, it was just to get my feet wet. And like I said, three steps, right? Buy, earn, mine. I wanted to knock mine off, and now I have. What's next? That's a different conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like a stepping stone, for sure. And the value, this is something that I always mention in my proof of prudence series when it comes to getting into mining. You know, you got to make sure that you understand certain things before you invest your hard-earned or hard-bought Bitcoin into this. The education part is very, very subjective, and it sounds like there was a lot of value for you in it. What do you think specifically changed? So if you talk about mining today, now that you own some hash rate versus you talking about mining before, how do you talk about it? Did you change anything, or was it all the same?
I would say conceptually, what mining can do for the environment, in the positive way of taking renewable energy, stabilizing the grid, that I don't think has changed much. What has changed is articulating the value, as you said, for an individual miner, for why someone should even start with one S19 to try. Before, having never tried it, it was just hypothetical of, yeah, I think it makes sense for you to try it. Yeah, it's going to be loud. But now I would say I feel more comfortable and more confident having these conversations, having those 10 machines. Yes, I don't operate them myself, But having even gone through the process of, hey, what pool do you select? Well, that's never a question that was ever posed to me prior to this experience. So even understanding, well, why are there different pools? How do the different pools operate? What distinguishes one over the other? I mean, you've been pivotal in helping me. So I would by no say I'm an expert in this domain whatsoever. I'm still a toddler, but there's more awareness that wasn't there previously. So now I would say what's changed is I'm speaking from experience rather than what I thought was the case.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
Yeah, it's a bit like owning Bitcoin for the first time. You know, it gives you this incentive of learning more about it. And so owning your first miner now gives you an incentive to learn about different pools and how do they perform, because now your actual financial results are tied directly to it. Can you say which pools you are using today and why?
Yes, I use Wilson, just the cheapest option, not much fees that I have to pay. Luxor, their dashboard's amazing. So I had 9 machines on Wilson, 1 on Luxor. As great as a Luxor pool was in giving me all the information, I was just paid out less, and it cost me more. So when I was maximizing for my payouts, there's no bells and whistles in Wilson, but next step is, I know you've been on my case about this for almost a month or two now, but I need to go and try Ocean. So that's next.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. And it's just cool to be able to compare payouts yourself and see the differences, and also maybe partake in discussions online in a different way. And can you say and talk a little bit about the financial performance to date, Santosh? Feel free to skip it if you don't want to. I'm just spoken.
No, it's fine. I mean, high level.
Give people a bit more of a realistic idea of how this works.
Yeah. Rough math. I don't have it in front of me, but last time I checked, US dollar wise, there's about a 4% return of my initial investment on a monthly basis, and Bitcoin terms around a 5%. So it's beating inflation depending on where you are in the world. The goal, of course, is to stack more sats. So it depends, of course, like some months I have more fiat commitments, some months more Bitcoin commitments. So it's hard for me to say just the Bitcoin return. So I am keeping an eye on the US returns and the Bitcoin returns. But I think it's just awesome. You know, there's these machines that are running somewhere, someone's taking care of them. And every 2 days, or depending on what I choose my payout threshold to be, sats just appear. Yes, there was work that an investment had to go through it. There's work being done behind the scenes. I have to pay bills on a monthly basis. But the fact that mining and being able to get paid for the hash rate I share for the pool, I don't know. It's a cool experience to go through. I don't know how to describe it in words. When you pull up your wallet, and you're like, oh, another payout. That's nice. Okay.
Yeah, no, and especially because, I mean, there was a bit of a hiccup with the hoster that we've started off with, right? Where, and this is also a reality of this, right? And I think also a good learning experience, where now the electricity rate for the hoster that we had organized at first now increased, right? And now the machines had to be moved. Now all of a sudden you've got logistical cost, or a machine breaks. Now you have to decide, do you want the hoster to repair it, or do you repair it with the warranty that's still active, and yada yada yada. Now you all of a sudden you realize, okay, what's support worth if nobody answers, and what's your warranty worth if nobody answers? How do you handle those kind of hiccups? Like, do you expect them and calculate them into your financial models, or do they all come as a surprise?
In the first model that I had, I built in a buffer, like a maintenance cost. I think I put it at 5 or 5 or 7% annually. one hash board blowing for the new machine was unexpected. So that definitely caught me off guard. The warranty wise, some centers in the US responded, but then their form that you have to fill in doesn't accept all US addresses. And that back and forth cost me 3 weeks. So if I just decided to get it fixed by the hoster, I would have saved myself the trouble. So learning experience, as you said. Now, if anything blows, I'll be like, yep, just fix it. I'm not going to wait, because I realized if anything is down even 1 hour, that's less hash rate, means less sats in my wallet at the end of the day. And if I'm maximizing for that, I need these machines running 24/7.
It's opportunity cost, right? So go into detail more there a bit. What do you mean it took 3 weeks?
Okay, so I go to Foreman one day and I find out that one of the miners has an issue. Oh, crap. Hey, Jesse, what's going on? And you tell me, hey, look at the details. Okay, well, hashboard doesn't seem to be working right. Hey, ask the hoster, can you double check? Yep, hashboard, it's off or it's blown. You need a new hashboard. What are my options? Well, I can either send it back to the manufacturer for warranty within the 1 year, or the hosting provider can fix it for me. There's obviously a much higher cost with the hosting provider to fix. Now I need to decide, where do I send it for the warranty to take place? In the US, there's multiple centers. So I need to first pinpoint which center is closest to the hosting provider to avoid logistical nightmare, and then reach out to like the top five that are closest. So many of them didn't respond. The one that was closest did respond. They were very responsive until I hit a snag in the ticketing system. So it took me 2 to 3 weeks to figure out where I can send it, that they'll accept the warranty, and I'm good to send it there. So when I actually got to the ticketing process, the sender address, which is the hosting address, it wasn't accepted because that city wasn't in the dropdown. So I went back to the customer service rep. I said, hey, I don't have an option here. I went back again. I just never got a response. And I said, you know what? This is just not worth the time. It's 3 weeks and counting. Hosting provider, just fix it. And that's when we had to switch. So again, I learned the lesson.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why this is worth a lot. You know, once you start mining bigger, now you know, okay, like what to expect, what machines to buy, what the support is like, and so on and so forth. And you said at the beginning, you know, obviously there's a much higher cost for the hosting operator to fix the machine. But if you sum up 3 weeks of hash rate for that machine, now you've got opportunity cost. And it can quickly cost you a lot more to have the machine fixed under warranty than just paying the hoster the fee to, you know, unrack the machine, fix it, and rack it again and plug it back in. And another point that you touch on is not directly, but I'm gonna riff off of that is the passive investment, passive income discussion. Right, people ask me, "Oh, does you want to invest in a couple machine to have passive income?" I'm like, no. This is not. Then you should just buy Bitcoin and wait, and maybe I don't know, lend it out to someone, and make yield that way or whatever. But mining is not a passive investment. Like, you have to now sit there and research and select machines and what pools and compare payouts and this and that and the other to really optimize that investment. And I'll say one more thing. All of this is because the margins are already quite slim. If you have a low number of machines hosted somewhere, your margins mm-hmm. are not as great as marathons, you know. But yeah, so it's all in the details, and this shows very well, and which is also why I'm glad you so openly speak about it. It openly shows the reality of it. You know, I wrote this article on LinkedIn, which I have to update again, because also my machine had to be moved, and where I just sort of track the financial performance and the pool choices and the hash rate. And now the miners were down for 4 weeks because of shipment. You know, I have to put together the pallets, they have to be direct, then it has to be shipped, then communication, then there's a queue at the next host where you need to wait until your machine goes online again, and yada yada yada. And all of a sudden a month goes by, and that's $200 on top, because you just lost $200 of profit, you know? So that's the reality of it. It's not, oh, I'm just going to buy 1,000 miners and then have a couple petahash, and it's just going to be free money forever and ever. Like, this is not the reality of things.
I concur 100%. The one aspect that I don't know if I fully am on board with is the sentiment of, so let's step back a second, right? People typically refer passive income from their mental models of real estate, is where that mentality usually comes from. Fortunately, I have seen a rental investment and I've dealt with tenants to compare the two. And I definitely also came in with that expectation of like, oh yeah, passive income to some extent. I mean, you'd already warned me, don't look at that. So you'd already gone through this conversation with me. And I took all of that into, I took all of that to play. But I still feel real estate has the same problems. You know, a pipe might burst. Your tenant might not pay you a month. Something may happen to the window. AC stops working. There's always some problem or the other. I will say this is a little bit less problematic because it's not humans involved. It's just machines running. And you've got with real estate humans and machines in the vicinity. I don't want to turn this into a which one's better. Not here to talk about that. But I am still enamored by the sub, I'll put it in quotes, passive sats that you could get. Now that I've gone through it in the 6 months and understand some of the risks, I know it's not as passive as I originally thought, but it still feels a little passive.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's a scale, it's a gradient, right? I mean, there's ways to invest in mining where you don't own the machines and you have a yield after 4 years of payout. You know, that's you sort of removing yourself even further as an investor from the machines. The closer you get to the machines, though, the more you learn, the larger the aspect of education is, the more value you get out of it there. But the more unpassive it becomes, the more active it becomes, right? Same with real estate. If you owned a property and you paid somebody to manage it for you, then it becomes more passive. But now you're giving up margin to have less headaches, right? So, mm-hmm. So it's really where you want to be. And I want to talk to you about Foreman as well. You mentioned Foreman. Can you, from your perspective, explain what Foreman is and where you got and why it was important to you?
To be quite transparent, Foreman wasn't something that I went into all the time. If anything, whenever we spoke, I'd be like, I need to go check Foreman. So our conversations were always the leading indicator that, you haven't checked Foreman in like 3 weeks. So thank you for keeping me straight there. But what is Foreman? Foreman is a dashboard that allows you to view your miner performance. So rather than relying on a third party that directly from a pool, Foreman's plugged into your miners directly and you see how are they performing, what hash rate are you getting on an hourly basis, on a minute-by-minute basis. So you can tell if there's been any issues and if their performing is expected. So for me, I go to Foreman and I'd see, do I see the total petahashes that are supposed to be there? Yes, cool, all is well. All right, move on. And then ideally, I should have done it every other day. I ended up doing it every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, which is why I was 1 week late in catching that miner had blown. Mm. Because if I'd done it every 2 days, I'd have known much earlier. So to sum it up, dashboard to see, are your miners good or bad?
How do you feel now that you don't have that access anymore?
Terrible. Even though I only use it for once every 3 weeks, the fact that I can go and actually see, okay, worker 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are good. The one that I expect to be bad is bad. Okay, peace of mind. Now I don't know anything. I'm just waiting on my wallet to see what lands. And then it's like, yeah, that kind of seems right. Okay, I guess nothing is wrong. And I don't have the information to make. I don't have the data to make data-driven decisions now. It's just, hey, does this math somewhat make sense? And hey, in mining, we're always going to get less sats. It's not like the sats is going to go up. So keeping that in mind, I need to, like, when I first got my payout in this new host, the first thing I had to do was, does this math check out? Is it the same as the old one? Or is it just, did I lose another machine? Or has the sats just dropped a little bit? I didn't lose another machine. It's just the sats were dropping slightly. So yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm experiencing it with you, right? And what just happened, to tack on what we talked about before, is we just got removed further from the miner. And we still have the same economical performance, right? So we have less visibility, but we're getting the same for it. So effectively, we're getting a worse deal.
Sorry, Jesse, I'm curious. What determines that a hosting provider can give you Foreman access or not?
So Foreman is a miner management software that runs on the account of the hoster. And they can give their hostees guest visibility on certain machines. And it's first of all, the hoster has to use Foreman on their own premises to be able to give you access. It costs, I think, at scale, 60 cents per miner per month or something. There are people who don't like it. And it's just, it's a one-way street. So the hoster basically determines who gets what. And sometimes there's people in the middle, right? So if you now work with an aggregator, like what we're doing, we're working with Hashbrands, who are also sponsor of the show, who are an aggregator, who get a better deal, who then in turn can give you a better deal, rather than just going alone to the hoster and going directly, right? The hoster we have has a dashboard, but we don't have access to it now. Because we're not direct with them. So we're giving up, so we're paying a better rate, but we're giving up that sense of control. And what I really liked was Santosh to go back in time, right? Go back in time, check the last week, maybe check it once a week, right? Get alerts on my phone or my Telegram when something went wrong. That's also not available anymore. Also realize that this, and I write about this again in the proof of prudence thing, is, you know, I say make sure you have Foreman access. Now we don't anymore because of certain circumstances. Why? Because it gives you a check on the host as well, right? You can now compare the payouts, and that's all you can do, and you can look at the hash rate arriving at your pool, right? But what you cannot do is you cannot see how many times the miner restart. How did the hash rate perform over the last week? You know, does what the hoster is saying with regards to the operation of your machine line up with what you're seeing in Foreman, right? It's a one-way street now. And I'm working to change that because I realize it's extremely valuable, especially if it's all about the margins. And they're that slim, right? You need to get the most out of the machine, and it also reduces the amount of education that you have access to, right? So it's a big piece of information if you can see how fast are the fans spinning, what's the temperature where the miner is located. It's summer now, you know why, you know, the fans are spinning more than they usually would, like how's the facility performing? You know, is the temperature inside the facility maybe going up? Like, there's so much data that you can get out of that visibility. And it just makes sense to have access to it. And that's also why some hosters, I guess, rightfully don't give their clients access to it. I don't know if you've ever done crowdfunding, right? The guy with 50 euro will ask you the most questions, and the guy with 10,000 euro investment will never, you never hear from them, maybe once a year. And for the hoster, it means effort and work and input to deal with customer requests that they don't have. Let me just mute, as in Valencia, there's a lot of sirens. It makes the hoster have to deal with requests that they otherwise would not have, right? So there's, I can understand it from both sides, but I, as a customer, from the customer perspective, I have to say I really don't like having that visibility anymore. Even though I can see the performance on the miner on the dashboard.
Let's humor this. I'm a big believer there's two sides to a coin. So let's take the side of the hoster here. Mm-hmm. Now, if the hoster were to provide me some sort of report on a weekly basis to give me some indication of what's going on with my machines, I'm okay, right? I find that it's not perfect middle ground, but hey, I'm getting something. Mm-hmm. Because now, if let's say, I mean, looking at my mining wallet isn't top priority. It sits there and I look at it when I'm reminded by odd things that come up. So if I forget, sometimes when life comes up, it takes 3 weeks, which is exactly what happened when that one miner blew, is I will have no idea until I just remember to go and check my wallet to see if it's there or not. So if there was a report or I was informed, hey, your miner just went down, what would you like us to do? I see your point. Who am I compared to someone who hosts 1,000 machines? But if I don't get foreman access, at least letting me know when a machine is down would be an expected outcome from a customer.
HashRedUp is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HashRedUp. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content.
What you said is actually very valid. You know, send an automated report or maybe build that feature into things. I think that could be a very cool intermediate solution that sort of balances it out both ways, right?
So Jesse, are there different types of miner management software then in the industry that different hosting providers use?
So some will build their own.
Huh.
Foreman is by and large the most widely distributed option. But the issue with Foreman is that you sort of have to take it as is. It's very inflexible. And Bitcoin mining operations might all sound the same when they're air cooled. But they're not, you know, there's so much different components going on, electrical equipment, fans, setups in the infrastructure. And some people might mine on gas. Some people might mine on stranded hydro. Some people might mine on grid, you know. So, and if everybody uses Foreman, you're sort of getting the same out of it, even though different metrics might be more important than others for certain setups. And so that's why some people just decide to build their own. That's where Foreman kind of falls short. I mean, it's not a product that's supposed to be very individualistic. It's take as is, and it's enough for most people, which is why they use it. But there's definitely other options out there. And of course, you can build your own. You know, you can pull the data from your machines that you have running and visualize them your own way. You know, that's perfectly possible.
Is there a need for a software company to fix that in mining, or do big one like do the big players end up just building their own and there's no need for someone to fix this for them?
The big players do build their own, because again, you know, if you're a publicly listed company or whatever and you have certain setups, you'll have your engineers and technicians, and you can keep them busy with building your own software that's very individual to you. A lot of people also don't want third-party software on site. I am trying to promote a software called Optiminer a lot, together with a contact of mine who developed it, which is a miner management software visualizer and also optimization tool, right? So there's an add-on to the software called Ultranonce that is able to optimize machines automatically by running a Raspberry Pi in your data center. But there's a lot of people who don't want that. They don't want third-party gadgets on their site, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how I would sum that up.
Okay. That's fair.
So what's next?
I'll look up Optiminer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you won't find much. They're not not very big, but I can send you some stuff after. What's next for you in mining, Santosh? Where do you want to take this? Are you stopping? Are you deciding to make ROI first? You're selling your machines. You're replacing them. You're going big or going home. What's happening?
We got to go big. We need to find renewable energy, and we got to plug in as many miners as we can. I've never thought that. Yes, we had to fundraise for bring in, but to mine, I don't have all the capital to get this large. I'm ready. Now that I've seen like the retail side, as I don't see that to be scalable long term, given the rates that I'm going to get. So I can either choose to buy another X machines, do this, and then slowly grow, or say, you know what, screw that middle part. Let's just find that renewable energy where it's at, or find the cheapest form of energy, is where I would like to go next.
Where do you think it's going to go next, mining?
Africa.
Why?
Well, two reasons. One, selfishly, it has a warm place in our heart. We spent 15 months there, and our lives have changed since spending all that time in that continent. So one, it is massively misunderstood, underrepresented. I mean, even the map doesn't do justice to what Africa is. The Mercator map projects it totally incorrectly. It is a massive continent, and that map's a lie. So that's just, I mean, I don't want to get into that, but that's just the nature of moving a 3D object to 2D. So that's it. But coming back to the point, Africa doesn't have electricity. I believe this quote is like, what, 80 or 70% of Africa doesn't have electricity. But there are so many renewable energy sources that are disconnected from the grid that can help electrify Africa slowly. But they don't have anchor tenants, or they don't have a individual consumer of all that electricity. And if it all goes to waste and no one pays for it, well, the power producer goes out of business. So Bitcoin mining can stabilize the grid, keep that power producer in business, and light up the local community. And I remember walking through the gridless hydro facility and hearing people say, we now have lights for the first time thanks to what's going on here. That's like, from a Western perspective, I flip the switch, light comes on. That's what I'm used to. And then you come here and you're like, oh shit, that's a huge deal. But you're the expert. You tell me, is it Africa or is it another continent?
I think so. The whole premise of my company is to bring more hash rate to Africa, precisely because of what you said. I mean, miners always want cheap power. Like you said, your power is quite expensive, so your margins are slim. Your ROIs are long. And I think, to summarize a long story, we now have a lot of machines that are sitting around idle, paperweights in most parts of the world. And if you have the option to find power that's untapped, that's stranded, not used, now you have got free power, quote unquote, right? And that's what you need for these old machines to plug into, to give them another lease at life. And that's what I find super fascinating. And you know, with the family, three kids, it's not always easy to travel much, but it is definitely the way to go. I mean, look, I do this podcast, I sell machines, I broker hosting, all for the sake of making enough money to buy my own machines, find my own power, and get my feet wet, and you know, probably fall flat on my face. But that's part of the journey, you know. I'm strongly convinced that, as you said, mining can unlock a lot of this. There's a lot of problems in power to sort of loop back to the beginning of our conversation, where power is a problem for people that Bitcoin can solve. You know, there's a lot of wasted energy, and that's a problem for a lot of people where Bitcoin mining can help be a solution. And I want to bring that to more people and show and like, you know, make them understand how powerful this tool can be. If you plug in, call it 20 miners in the middle of nowhere, then all of a sudden you can make you know, $1,500, $2,000 a month in total from power that was previously maybe burnt off to keep a local grid stable or something, you know. There's a lot of education needed and a lot of, like, you got to keep your nose to the ground like a truffle pig to find these gems. But I think the more we do that, the more we also unlock capital to do more, to maybe fund a hydro dam that's larger where there is no grid, you know, to set up cool projects. And that's what I'm doing it for. And that's why that's what also keeps me going. Yeah.
Keep inspiring us. My domain has been so focused on merchant adoption that, like, mining hasn't gotten the time it deserves, but I feel soon enough that there'll be a full-fledged year or two where I'm all in on mining time-wise, and then you'll have a running mate for the African adventures.
Yeah, I'm all for reality. I'm all for it. What would you say, to maybe round off, Santosh, to how do you see mining differently, or Bitcoin differently, sorry, today, now that you have a bit more insight? Does it, I mean, for me, just to give you maybe a head start here, for me, it's made, like, once I understood mining to a certain extent, I was like, okay, this is never going to go away, you know? And I don't know how you see it. I would like to know. And maybe also give listeners an idea of what mistakes to avoid when it comes to starting this journey on their own.
What's changed is I want more hash rate. That's what's changed. Before it was like, hash rate, yeah, that sounds like a cool metric that miners are measured by. Now it's like, oh no, I want this much hash rate. I want to be on the board. I want 1 exahash. But soon we're going to cross 1,000, and then I don't know, what is it? Zeta hash? I don't even know.
Zeta hash. Yeah.
Okay. So then it's going to be 1 zeta hash, and it's like, well, I need to 1,000x.
No, you got to sit down, man. You got to buckle up. That's
the numbers are outrageous. So for me, it's just getting on the board. You know, I was on the board, and I just want to slowly level up. And I also want to make a difference, as in, I want mining not just it to be passive or active, whatever it is help the community as well. So if it is linked to a renewable source, it helps the community. And I feel that's where the magic really happens. And that's hard to do when I'm on the road. I need to come to Africa, put roots down, and be able to make that difference. The second question you said is, if someone were to start, what should they avoid? Know what you're getting yourself into. This isn't just, I'm going to buy some miners and I'll get magic non-KYC sats just like that. You need to make the right decisions on what kind of miners to get, where to host. If problems do arise, are you willing to not get paid out for a month? Warranty, repairs, being able to measure performance. So as easy as it might be looking from the outside and say, oh yeah, I can just buy and sit back. Not as simple as that. I mean, you could say that with real estate, I'll just buy a home and sit back and I'll get a rent. Not as easy. So just be aware of the numbers and do your own research, to play that cliche. Do your own research before you jump in.
Yeah, for sure.
And Jesse will help a ton. So make sure you do your research via Jesse.
Gladly. I will help and tell you why not to mine. cool, man. Santosh, thank you so much for your time. I know you'll enjoy Spain a bit more before coming home. In January, I'll hopefully see you again. We have a couple conferences coming up. We've got the Africa Mining Summit in Zambia. We've got the Afro Bitcoin Conference that I'll hopefully go to in Mauritius. And then we've got Adopting Bitcoin at the end of January, as we found out before, at the end of January in Cape Town. And hopefully for at least one of those, I will see you in latest January, right?
Yes, that's a hope. Visas need to be accepted. So knock on wood.
Yeah. Make sure that happens. Cool. Thank you so much for your insight and your transparency, letting people have a glimpse into your journey from a customer perspective. I think it was very valuable. So thank you very much. And I'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Bye.